Welcome to A New Lens with Comma Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Comma Good Capital. I'm here with Susan Schramm, founder of GoTo Market Impact, a business consultancy that helps leaders of purpose-led organizations systematically de-risk their strategies and improve their ability to get funding. Susan, welcome. We're so grateful to have you here today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And I will say, after introing you, there's probably a little confusion of what exactly you do. So that will get fleshed out here in the next 20 minutes. But very much excited because you are come from a unique perspective. Your business lines up with this, but then you also have a personal interest as well. So let's get started. I'm going to ask you a few questions. The first one is, give us a little background of yourself.
Starting, we're born in Texas, child of a corporate nomad. We moved around a lot. So exploring new people and new places was always like part of my DNA. And so far, I've lived in 11 states in the US and have traveled in all 50 states. When I was 16, I wrote in my diary that I wanted to be a leader in an international business. And so I started with this little fledgling company called International Business Machines. And that put me on a path working in tech for Fortune 500 firms, joint ventures, spin outs, startups, and industry associations over the years. And whatever title I had, whether it was sales or marketing or finance or product management or strategy, my role has always been to help people launch stuff, or in fact, relaunch stuff, big ideas from new offerings, new brands, and entirely new companies. And it's been a very exciting journey for me and my family.
Well, that's a great overview. We'll obviously continue to delve in deeper there. So let me ask a little higher level question. How would you best describe yourself in light of where you are at on your current journey?
The journey of life is, I guess I describe myself as inspired, humbled, and impatient. That's where I am in the journey. I'm humbled and inspired because of what I see to be an unending creative ideas people have to make a positive impact in the world. Often, delighted to say, leveraging new technology to enable it. But I've become more urgent about moving faster from talk to outcomes. I see a lot of really great ideas get stuck, and there's a lot of needs in this world that need to be addressed. So I'm personally finding myself more focused than ever to eliminate and get some of the rocks out of the way that have made really good ideas get stuck.
Yeah, and we see that specifically in the impact investing space. So that's why having you on this podcast today is so important. So then how are you trying to change the world? A little question.
Right. And from my seat. So I love this community because you're all focused on making an impact in the world. And I chose not to start a new initiative because I saw so many out there. So what I decided to do was to focus on equipping leaders to drive impact faster by helping them de-risk new strategies. It takes a lot of courage of leaders to bring people together and improve the world for their customers and their employees and their community and the planet. But there's also risk, the risk of either losing value you've built or risk of missing windows so you can create more value. And what I found is that many organizations don't have a process for addressing risk. It's often a very ad hoc approach. It varies depending on who's driving. And many leaders manage risk in their head, and they don't really want to even acknowledge risk sometimes. So what I focus on is helping leaders apply a systematic process to de-risking their strategies by avoiding the most common mistakes. And I use a system I've defined called the Changemakers De-Risk System for Impact. And we use a variety of tools and frameworks based on six principles of de-risking. It's a team effort, are able to uncover the risks of their strategy, prioritize them, and put a plan in place to more confidently manage them. And the result I've found in working with people is, first of all, the first goal is clarity. Just clarity is the first win. Alignment is the next win, and then confidence is the next. So you get this ability, whether it's within a leadership team or with a leadership team and their board, with employees, with funders, with partners, and of course, with customers in the community, a building of trust because you've achieved clarity, alignment, and confidence. So that's where I'm spending my time right now.
You know, it's interesting the way you answered that. It made me think in my own mind 7 years ago when I personally started to invest in impact investing. One of the things that happened to me, which, like I said, I hadn't really put the two and two together until you're discussing this, is I invested in a couple of one affordable housing option and another one in mobile home communities. And ironically, the de-risking part was, and I mean from a portfolio perspective, is actually what gave me the freedom to do it. But the second piece to it, which was the added benefit, was that it aligned with my values and it was something that I believed in. But based on the timing, I don't know that I would have done it just by the emotional value piece. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the investment to me, and this isn't always the case in investing, felt like I was de-risking my portfolio as a whole. So very interesting that that's the way you described that. So let me ask you a question then. What are some of the common mistakes that people or organizations make?
Well, I go through a systematic process of defining the six dimensions of it. And a lot of it, I think, at the end of the day, is going to sound incredibly simple, but it's the idea of, and I'm going to dive into one of them I think we have time for, but it's reconfirming why and why now, clarifying why you and who you're solving this for, who needs to take action, rethinking how, anticipating what if. These are the problems that a lot of people don't, they skip, and there's no process to what they're doing. So the first common mistake really is tending to focus, instead of focusing on why you're trying to achieve this, you focus on what. People fall in love. Say if it's affordable housing, they fall in love with the different kinds of technology and the abilities to deploy it in different scenarios, right? The offer. But instead of focusing on what, people need to focus on why. And in tech, you know, I learned this in tech, and we love our cool, new, shiny what or solution. You know, that's where we put tons of money, tons of focus. But the result is that people end up getting confused, actually. If there's no clarity there for the why, you end up with leaders and employees not clear on how they're executing together. They're not clear on how they communicate what they're doing. They not always aligned on the same priorities. They might be less resilient, for instance, because if your solution isn't suddenly so shiny, then if the problem you're working on is clear, it's a lot easier. So that's the first and most common mistake, is focusing on what instead of why.
Well, I had the pleasure, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but I had back surgery 7 years ago, which forced me to think about my why, and frankly, gave me the time to think about my why. So apart from encouraging somebody to have surgery and to be still, what's the best way for somebody to go about or to think about discovering their why?
Yeah, and you know, you're making an interesting point, because it's two levels, right? You're asking this question about your why from a personal point of view. You were sitting there looking at the ceiling saying, why am I here? What am I supposed to do with the rest of my life? Organizations have that same challenge. I think there's a three-step approach, I'd say, to focusing on your whys. The first is ask yourself, what problem do I want to solve? And that's different than just a high-level aspiration. It's what problem do I want to solve? Second part is for whom? And be as specific as possible on that one. And then three is, how big a problem is it? In other words, how big a scope are you taking on as you want to solve this problem? So for instance, your why could be, if it's an organization, your why could be, we save people time. We do that by enabling them to buy books online. Or you could say, we help the world solve problems faster by discovering anything they ever wanted to own and receive it the next day, which is obviously an Amazon example. The difference in those two, you know, both of them happen to sell books, but the difference is, you know, who are you solving for? What is the skills you're going to need on your team? What kind of resources are you going to need? What kind of infrastructure, partnerships, funding? And a lot of times I think people are a little bit too vague as they think about their why.
Well, that's a good example and very helpful. Do you have any other examples you can share with us?
Let's maybe tune it to something a little bit more value-centric. Let's talk about hunger. You could define the question of the problem you're solving as, we eliminate hunger in the world. That could be the goal, the problem statement of the why. Or you could get really clear on who you're solving it for and how that we help poverty level families in inner city Chicago have access to healthy food, right? So that those are two types of ways to define your why, but one of them doesn't necessarily get clarity for people to take action. And the focus, the resources, the ability to align people to move together is really much more effective if you get really clear on how you do this. Now, the why exercise can be extended. It can also be not just why and the problem you're solving, but why you? Why are you solving that problem? What do you bring to the table? So why, I think, is an exercise that's iterative. You would do this in a series, but as a team, when you do this as an organization, you find that people tend to think they know what the other person's talking about it. And when it shows up in disconnects. If you don't really get on the same page, it also makes, as I said, it makes you much more resilient. People get frightened when the world changes, but if you're real clear on the problem you're solving, you can just take a big breath and say, okay, we might have to solve it in a new way, but we're clear on the problem we're solving. So that's what I'd recommend.
This next question may be deviating slightly, although I have a feeling it will tie in. And you can answer this both from a company perspective and your own personal perspective, if you'd like. When did you realize the power of capital?
So when I got my first allowance. So I'd say, you know, as a child, I certainly was raised understanding the value of dollar and how interest can grow. But I think in the work I do now, I've really been amazed at the constraints of really great ideas in terms of how resources can make a difference. And it isn't always huge resources. A lot of the things, when we de-risk it, we get more specific about where resources are needed, at what inflection points. Sometimes those resources might be through partners. It isn't always their own. But I think that the impact of capital as one kind of resources is a really important vehicle to make change in the world. To that extent, truthfully, personally, then, as I started looking at my own investments and my own thinking about how I could make a difference in the world, I was amazed how so many initiatives could be changed if we directed resources to them. So impact investing, you know, I started talking to my own advisor, wealth advisor, about how to think about using our dollars in a different way to be more intentional about putting resources to organizations that could make a difference in the world.
All right, this next question is one, again, that I ask most the individuals that are on our podcast, and it's fascinating the direction they can go. So I'm anxious to see where you take this. What does stewardship mean to you?
You know, it's interesting because stewardship by nature is a long-term game, right? You have to have a long-term view of the outcome you're striving for to be a good steward. It's not an instant fix. And it calls you, I think, at the end of the day, to recognize that it's a journey and it demands attentiveness. So being a steward of an asset means you look at it over time, you check in on it, you're aware of what you're trying to, you define what good looks like, but you also are listening and observing and attentive to the environment that changes. It's not only a plan, but it's being ability to proactively take action. So being a steward isn't just looking over something, but it's actually having the guts to sometimes take action when things aren't going well. In fact, as I help clients with the principles of de-risking, we talk about being a good steward of risk, to be prepared and anticipate the future and committing to evaluating the risk, and also to seize these moments where there's inflection points in a market or in a technology or in government environment that would allow you to amplify your impact. So it really is a responsibility, but it also is an action-oriented approach, not a passive one.
Very interesting. I appreciate your comments on that. All right, so now we're going to have, not that this hasn't been fun, but this is going to be totally wide open. If you could make one dream come true, and it doesn't have to be the pinnacle or the first thing or the best thing, but if you could have one dream come true for your life, what would that be?
Okay, so I'm not going to say the one I used to say, which is I want to be part of the running of the bulls in Pamplona. I studied in Spain and I always thought that sounded fun, but I guess over time I've watched too many people get courted. But I think for me and my life, because this is a nice inspirational kind of tone, I truly feel like if I could be a force multiplier that completely changed the landscape to build communities and save lives, it would have been worth it. That is exactly what I want to be doing at this chapter in my life. And it's funny because I'm actually living the dream, because a lot of the things I do in helping these amazing purpose-led leaders actually feel more confident as they evaluate their risks and learn how to live with it and steward it. I really feel like I'm there. I'm living the dream.
I think a lot of people would love to be able to say they're living their dream. So that's congratulations to you. Do you mind sharing an example or two of some of the themes that the businesses that you're working with that you think are making a big difference?
Yeah, well, I've had the privilege of working with the 911 Association. We're working on accelerating the deployment of technologies like artificial intelligence and machine learning to the world of emergency response. I've been working with an organization that's helping Nehemiah Project, that's working on accelerating the impact of entrepreneurship on countries around the world to actually create jobs. I've worked with the Air Force Academy on the ability to accelerate startup innovation to help do more with weather and helping us anticipate the impact of weather on the world, which can affect not only defense postures, but also farming and growth and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's been quite varied and worked with libraries on the ability to help them play a role in improving confidence in new technologies and smart cities. Anyway, lots of different things, never a dull moment.
You and I obviously know each other. And one of the attributes that's either good or bad that God has put into my heart is I could ask about a million questions. And so I could ask you a million questions, but I gotta ask you one more in light of what you just said. And I'm trying to think how to phrase this. Just given where we are in the world today with COVID, social unrest, racial tension, political tension, any thoughts about de-risk or risk, just given all that we're involved with today? You have any general thoughts on that?
You know, I see those very much. It's a lot of how I feel I'm called right now, because I think that people see risk as something to completely run from. And in fact, risk is something that actually you live with every day. We were actually designed to be able to handle a lot of uncertainty and move forward if you have confidence and faith that there's a bigger picture for your life. But I think sometimes I mean, there's the greatest story of the parable of the talents, right? The fearful person who was given this opportunity to make a difference and buried it because they were terrified that they might risk something. But in fact, the people who stepped out and took a risk and invested or built something were rewarded, and I think by the master. And I think that coming from a place of calm, this is a long, long game, part of a much bigger picture than just today. There has been many, many presidents and many countries over time. And I said, as a result, that I feel like risk is something that I'm personally being called to help people take, with the idea that taking risks for a bigger purpose is really what we're all called to do.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of that. What I didn't realize that when I transitioned my career from traditional finance to impact investing, I've been shocked at how innovative and creative I have seen in the impact space, where this perception, it tends to be all heart. But what you realize is when you embrace risk, make educated decisions about it, you can have massive impact and change in a positive light. So I very much appreciate your comments. Thank you so much for joining us. Hearing your wisdom is always helpful. And for those who want to learn more about what you do, obviously we can help get you in contact with Susan, and she can either work with you personally or with your company. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcast, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer, and I'll see you next time. Susan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.